Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, will the federal government help Pennsylvania's cash-strapped cities and municipalities? But up front, the 2020 U.S. Census has continued throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. With all the daily news about the coronavirus and other significant news this year, the census may not have gotten as much attention as it normally would. But it has been moving along, in some places better than others. However, this year's population count may be one of the most important ever because of what the pandemic has done to state and local government budgets. Here with an update on the census is Norman Bristol Cologne, Executive Director of the Governor's Census 2020 Complete Count Commission. Mr. Cologne, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me once again, Scott. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about possibly one of the most important issues in 2020 other than the pandemic and the presidential elections.
Well, we're going to talk about the importance in just a moment. I want to tell our listeners, if you have a question or a comment about the census, this is your opportunity. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Facebook, you can go to WITF's Facebook page and leave a question or comment. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, let's start with that question, something that you just mentioned, something I mentioned in the introduction about how important the census is. It's important every 10 years that we do it, but maybe more so this year. Why?
It is important because I believe the nation is more diverse than ever before. But in addition to that, when you look at the United States today with 5 million cases of this pandemic and more than 170,000 people that have died, and when the federal government is announcing the possibility of having a vaccine at the beginning of the year, let's say early 2021, the distribution of that vaccine will be based on census numbers. And we all know that the distribution of funding, the distribution of political power, and now in this case, and in this year, it has been a very extraordinary year for many of us. We know that everything that the federal government is going to be providing to the states and to the territories is going to be so connected to the census and the numbers that we provide to the President of the United States.
Let's break it down even more specifically, because in a normal census year, and we've had this conversation even before the pandemic, the census is important, but let's talk about where the money will be going and why this year those numbers are so important. I'm looking for a little more specifics of how it will be spent and distributed.
Well, when you look at a nation with 30 million unemployed today, we all know that when the federal government comes back and they decide on funding for the next 10 years on unemployment and workforce development and education to make sure that we have the workforce of the future, they are going to be looking at the census and provide that funding to the state and that funding to the local government. When you look at cities across the state and across the nation that based on the pandemic, we have small businesses closing more than ever before. You know, as a matter of fact, there are some numbers that even state that the number of African-American businesses during this pandemic closed by 50%. When we look at educational resources and our kids no longer in schools and we don't have the broadband and the tablets available for them to have their education that they need at home, all those funding and all those resources from now on and moving into the future comes from the census numbers. And in addition to that, you know, when you look at the political landscape of the nation and you look that Pennsylvania play a major role in that political landscape and in moving ahead, if we don't have a complete and accurate count, we will be scheduled to lose one or two congressional seats. And that's why this year is extremely important. You know, and it is even more important because we are dealing with possibly the biggest and the strongest national disaster or the biggest public health issue in 100 years in our nation. And counting every single individual, at least I have said this before and I will say it again, we want to be in full compliance with the U.S. Constitution. And the U.S. Constitution demands that we count every single resident in our state and in our nation, and that has created, through the pandemic, so many challenges.
You said that, I mean, it's almost a given from what everyone says when you look at the population trends, that Pennsylvania is going to lose one congressional seat. Is there the possibility of Pennsylvania losing two? And what would have to happen for Pennsylvania to lose two congressional seats?
Well, there is always a possibility if we don't, you know, at this point, as of today, we have a response rate in Pennsylvania that is higher than the nation. It's about 63.6% at the national level. It's about close to 67% in Pennsylvania. Now, if we have other states that outperform Pennsylvania, especially states that have increasing population in the past 10 years, you know, like the North Carolinas and the South Carolinas of the world, if they outperform us in counting their population, there's no doubt that we will be scheduled to lose a seat and possibly two of them.
You know, for a regular person, they may say, well, so what? What if Pennsylvania loses one member of Congress or two members of Congress? What does that matter to the person on the street in Pennsylvania?
Well, you know, and that is a great question, Scott. Let me put it down to the, you know, to the neighborhood. When we are talking about kids not having the support that they need to go to college, and we are looking at Pell Grants, you know, as a product of the public education system, as a product of, you know, a system for myself and scholarship to go to college, I know that all this was connected to census, and now more than ever before. Let me look at the also put it on the perspective of a local municipality that is really you know, looking to improve roads and bridges. The next president of the United States, or whoever is elected in this year, they're going to have in their on their desk the decision to make the largest, possibly the largest infrastructure investment in our nation. You know, our nation is getting old. We need to make some investments in roads and bridges, but more importantly, in institutions that serve the people of the United States. And if we don't have a strong congressional delegation that will go to Washington and fight, independently of what party affiliation, remember that every time we send members of Congress from Pennsylvania to the walls of Congress, whether they are Republicans or Democrats, they go with a profound commitment to help the people of Pennsylvania. And if we don't have a strong congressional delegation, as the one that we have today, Pennsylvania will miss out in the investments that the nation is going to be making in infrastructure, in roads and bridges, in schools, in health care, that today is possibly the number one issue in the nation. And that's why that is so important.
You mentioned that nationally about 63% of households have responded to the census. Here in Pennsylvania, it is closer to 67%. In 2010, once everything was finished, nationally it was 81% response. Are we on track to hit the same return rate as 10 years ago? If not, where do we stand?
Well, I believe that if there would have been the extension that was provided by the federal government, and this is for your listeners to know, that the extension was until October 31st. Now it's back to September 30th. So we have about 43 days to complete the census, not only in Pennsylvania, but all across the nation. If the extension would have been granted, there is no doubt in my mind that we would have surpassed the numbers of 2010 and 2000 and previous census in modern Pennsylvania history. But due to the fact that we have a pandemic, that we have possibly one of the most difficult economic crises in our nation since the Great Depression, that, you know, the time to collect the data is no longer there, that it was cut short by 31 days. So we have a lot of work to do in the next 43 days to count every single Pennsylvanian. And I believe that if we all work together, you know, the institutions in the public and private sector, state government and local municipalities, I think that we might be able to surpass the 2010 numbers.
You think so? Are you confident, or do you think that's just a possibility?
I am confident that we are going to surpass the 2010. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of work once again, because the time is no longer what we expected. But we are working hard, and we are strongly committed to make sure that we are counting every single individual, because as you mentioned before, this is connected to, you know, even when we think individualistic or collectively, the census impact every single Pennsylvanian, whether you are a millionaire or you are a working class person, whether you are young or old, the census will impact the quality of life in neighborhoods, in rural Pennsylvania, in suburban Pennsylvania, all across the Commonwealth. And that is the message that we are going to continue to share with individuals, so they know how important the census is, not only for the nation, but for the daily life of ordinary Pennsylvanians.
Who is not being counted now?
You know, we are having a lot of challenges in counting the African-American population and in Philadelphia and in the large urban centers. So I will share with the audience that is listening to your show to please make sure that we count every single individual, but pay close attention to counting the African-American community of Pennsylvania, you know, 1.4 million individuals, and that is where we are having some of the challenges. In rural Pennsylvania as well, you know, we are happy to see that some rural counties already surpass the 2010 census, but we have to do better in rural Pennsylvania. And that's why we are calling on the County Commissioners Association. We are calling on the Pennsylvania Municipal League. We are calling on the 253 members of the House and Senate to work together with us, so we can really, you know, in the next 43 days, do a complete and accurate count. Because the fact of the matter is this, Scott, if we don't do a count and the funding is not coming from the federal government to Pennsylvania, to Pennsylvania taxpayers that already pay for it, the members, the 253 members of the House and the Senate of Pennsylvania, together with whoever is governor at that time, will have to decide where the funding is coming from. And guess what? Many times, we are the one ending paying for it. We are the taxpayers that will pay for whatever we didn't respond in the census. And that money is not coming to the state budget, then they will find a way to support Pennsylvania state government and the work that they were elected to do, and it's about improving the social, educational, and economic conditions of the almost 13 million Pennsylvanians.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Coming up on tomorrow's program, a topic that has been at the front of the news over the last week or so, and that is mail-in voting and the Postal Service. We'll be talking with Pennsylvania's Attorney General Josh Shapiro and also Pennsylvania Secretary of State Kathy Buchvar. That's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in. During this segment of today's program, we're talking about the Census 2020 with Norman Bristol Cologne, Executive Director of the Governor's Census 2020 Complete Count Commission. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Norman, before we went to the break, you mentioned that you were having some trouble, maybe that's not the right word, but at least a challenge of African Americans in Pennsylvania being counted. Why? Why is the count slow with African Americans?
Well, if you look at the number of individuals impacted by the pandemic, we know that it has impacted that the African Americans and communities of color all across the state, and that could be one of the reasons why we're having such a hard time. A big concentration of African Americans are concentrated in Philadelphia. At some point in the first surge of the pandemic, Philadelphia was the epicenter of COVID-19 in Pennsylvania, and that's where, you know, almost 50% of Philadelphia's 1.5 million residents are African Americans. And then on the second surge, if you look, you know, that we were doing so much progress, but then we look back in the summer, and Allegheny County was having the second surge, you know, and the pandemic cases. And that's where we have the second largest concentration of African Americans. So we believe that the pandemic has hit them hard, and that's why we're having the challenge in counting individuals in those communities.
But why would the pandemic slow down the census vote? Count, excuse me.
Well, you know, in communities of color and in communities where we have some disadvantage, the broadband is not there. The laptops and the tablets are not there. And we were counting on having food on the ground, census enumerators going in households in those communities where we have low performance response rates. And because of the pandemic, that wasn't the case. And that was scheduled to happen back in May. Even today, when we have enumerators going into households, it just started about 2 weeks ago. And that's where I believe we have some of the challenges.
What about the Latino community and other ethnic groups, the count amongst those ethnic groups?
Well, the count in those communities is still a challenge, especially because of the, you know, two main reasons that we had at the beginning of the census, that it was proposed to have their citizenship question. The question is no longer there, but that created some bad publicity inside the Latino community, even when the Latino community of Pennsylvania, 90% of them are U.S. citizens or legal residents of Pennsylvania. That created some challenge. And then in the, you know, few weeks ago, when you hear from the White House that they had a presidential memorandum requesting not to count undocumented immigrants, that also created another set of challenges for communities of color, for Latino communities, for refugees and immigrant communities in Pennsylvania. And the bottom line is this: we need to be in full compliance with the Constitution. And the Constitution never said that we needed to count only U.S. citizens. The Constitution bluntly states we must count every single resident that is in the nation on the day that that count is taking place.
You know, what you're describing, when you talked about the very early on when the administration had talked about that question about whether a U.S. citizen or not, but even in some rural areas, there seems to be a question of trust sometimes that maybe immigrants are leery about being counted because they fear what how that information could be used. But I'm even seeing that amongst some very conservative people that I don't know whether, you know, for whatever reason, that they are hesitant to comply. Are you finding that, and I guess what I'm saying is this seems to be as more politicized this year than in previous censuses. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, unfortunately, the civic duty of the nation that takes place every 10 years, and it is the largest peace mobilization effort in our nation to count every single person, it has been extremely politicized this year, and that is unfortunate. You know, it is unfortunate because at the end of the day, when we are talking about CDBG funds for municipalities, that many times in cities like York or Lancaster, that CDBG money would be the largest grant that they will receive from the Department of Community and Economic Development, but that money comes from the federal government, is in play. When we are looking at, you know, planning for the future, let's go to the one of the most challenging cities in Pennsylvania, like we're in Pennsylvania. And you look at Alvernia College, trying to do some development, economic development and community development in downtown Reading that is so needed. And we know that census funding is all connected to that development. That put that development in a very challenging position if we don't do the right thing. And then when we are looking about the political representation looking into redistricting and the decision making in Pennsylvania, whatever number we provide to the President of the United States by December 31st of this year, it will have a long lasting impact on Pennsylvania's political future, educational future, economic future. And that's why we are asking everyone, even when I know that many individuals that are listening to the show today, that they are extremely mad at how government is dealing with some things. I know that there are some people that do not want to deal with any government entity. But please know this as well, that this is extremely important for the future of your communities. Whether you are thinking in an individual way, or whether you are thinking collectively. The census, once again, this is not a political arm of the United States government, but it's an arm for fair funding, fair representation, and fair resources for communities across the Commonwealth.
I want to get back to some numbers. As far as those municipalities, those counties who have returned or complied with the census information, Bucks County leads the state with over 75%. Lancaster County is second with almost 75%. But I want to go to the county that is last in compliance in Pennsylvania. That is Forest County, maybe the most rural county in Pennsylvania, only 25%. And I think a lot of this goes back to what you had touched on earlier, and it's a conversation we've had many times here on this program and in state government, and that is access to the internet, broadband internet. Do you think that's one of the reasons that a county like Forest County is only at 25% compliance?
I believe that broadband is a big issue, and I think that with this pandemic as well, we all know that how broadband can change an entire generation when it comes to education and other resources. And even, Scott, when we look at Forest County today, and it's, you know, in the last position of all the response rate counties in the Commonwealth, we are still doing better than we did in 2010. You know, for Forest County in 2010, the response rate was about 22.1%. Right now, it is 25.9%, so we are a little bit, 4 points ahead that we did in 2010. But we know that the well-being for the farmers and the rural schools and the transportation that Forest County and rural Pennsylvania County needs is connected to the census.
What is the population of, the estimated population of Forest County, about 4,000 people?
I have here that is about 7,247.
Okay. So 7,000, it's one of the least populated counties in the state. First of all, I have to say that when you said 22% compliance in 2010, that surprised me a little bit. So they've already surpassed that. But with that population figure, in the overall, scheme of this thing, does that 7,400 people matter to Pennsylvania overall?
Well, you know, I'm not going to answer this based on the directives that we receive from the governor. The governor wants to count every single person in Pennsylvania, in rural, urban, and suburban. So the answer is absolutely yes. Every single person in Pennsylvania matters. And that's why we are putting all the efforts, not only to go to Philadelphia, where we know that we have the largest population, you know, of 1.5 million people, but also the 7,000 individuals that work, that play, that go to school in Pennsylvania, right there in Forest County. So I know that this is a big state, But we are going to make sure that in every single of the 67 counties, our message is clear that this is not a political movement, but it's a movement about, once again, making sure that we have fair funding and fair political representation for all Pennsylvanians.
And by the way, I didn't mean to suggest that Fars County didn't matter, because I was just looking at sheer numbers with that 7,400 people compared to the 13.3 million across the Pennsylvania, whether mathematically it would make a difference. Enumerators that you had mentioned, those who go door to door, is that happening now during the pandemic?
It is happening right now, and it will happen until September 30th. The enumerators are knocking on doors, and we have, well, the U.S. Census Bureau, they have 10 offices across the Commonwealth, and each one of those offices will have between 1,500 to 2,500 individuals, enumerators, working and visiting homes today. They have been fully trained on CDC standards and protocols. So it is a great question, and especially for communities across your listening area to know that, yes, the census is in communities today, so don't be afraid. They are going to be knocking on doors. They're going to make sure that we surpass the numbers of 2010, and they are going to be visiting homes at least six times between now and September 30th to get you counted.
Okay, you say don't be afraid. I assume you were talking about someone coming to your door. They'll have a badge, they'll have credentials, but what about the pandemic? What about coronavirus? Someone coming to your door, there may be people who would be a little bit hesitant to answer the door for someone they don't know.
That is a fair question. And once again, the enumerators have been trained on CDC standards and protocols. And if there's any individual that feel that they don't want to talk to anyone, they will leave the census paper questionnaire at the doorsteps in every home, and then they will pick it up when it's ready.
We had a listener suggest that when you were talking about the challenges in the Latino community and the African-American community of putting more messages out there on minority-owned radio stations or those stations that are programmed toward ethnic groups and that, you know, that have a large African-American listenership. Are you doing that already?
Well, we have been doing that since I think it was in February or March. And just to give you how this year has been so challenging to so many of us and so challenging to so many individuals across the Commonwealth, in our media campaign, we had over 250 million impressions, you know, on our social media campaign, you know, on the Facebook and LinkedIn and all the other social media platforms, which means that the message has been delivered on awareness to communities across the Commonwealth. To have over 251 million impressions, it is a big deal. But we also recognize that that will not get the job done. In the media front and in creating awareness and in, you know, letting people know, especially in communities of color, you know, the African American, the Asian American, LGBTQ, Latino community, the aging community, we have been delivering a clear message. And I think that the media campaign really fulfilled the mission that we were set to do, and we exceeded all expectations. And yes, indeed, we have, you know, Spanish radio stations, African American radio stations all across the Commonwealth that were involved in that campaign.
One final question, Norman, and we actually have gotten some questions from listeners on this, and they want to know, how can I be counted? How can someone be counted if they have not been visited by an enumerator, if they have not filled out their forms, or maybe even received what were maybe misplaced? How can someone be counted if they have not been?
Well, you know, individuals can do that by going to my2020census.org, O-R-G, And in there, they can respond right there online, or they can find a phone number in, I believe it's about 59 different languages that they can be helped to answer the census. And in addition to that, we have census workers in every single Pennsylvania community. So feel free to go to any of the public libraries or any of the local governments and find some information on the census, because as of today, we are extremely sure and confident that every single public agency in Pennsylvania is ready to help and provide assistance to those that need it.
That website again is what?
My2020census.org.
Okay, and we'll have a link to that on our website, WITF.org. Norman Bristol Colon is Executive Director of the Governor's Census 2020 Complete Count Commission. Norman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott, for once again giving me the opportunity to talk about this important issue.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Okay, I guess we're back. by the way, you know, I mention this every once in a while, but and a lot of people take me up on it, but we're always looking for your suggestions on topics to address on Smart Talk. So if you would like to suggest a topic, send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. We look at all of them. I compile all of them, and my producer Meredith compiles all of them, and you know, we just we have a lot of topics to talk about, especially today in 2020. But we do take all of these seriously. So, again, if you have a topic to suggest, send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. With businesses shutting down and workers losing their jobs, tax revenues are way down in Pennsylvania cities and municipalities. Some have already resorted to cutting services like police and fire, but there could be more to come. That's why the state's municipalities are asking Congress for financial aid to help offset the financial losses. Joining us is Rick Schutler, who is the executive director of the Pennsylvania Municipal League. Rick, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott. Good to be here.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. So, Rick, give us a sense of how Pennsylvania municipalities and cities are faring financially during this pandemic.
Well, overall, you know, certainly it, you know, matters the individual community, but overall it's been difficult and will continue to be difficult, if not even more difficult going into 21. Certainly, we, you know, the National League of Cities, our partners that we're part of, did a study a few months back that anticipated revenues in Pennsylvania for local governments could be down as much as 40%. And what they looked at was overall revenues, not only the main sources, which are the property tax and the earned income tax, but also the gross receipts tax. Parking revenues are big in more urban areas. And so all of those things, in fact, realty transfer taxes are all affected, certainly in the short term. But in the longer term, we think that those impacts are going to be had also, as you know, some of the larger big box stores have been open, but a lot of the mom and pops that are located in our communities have not been able to be open. So all those things are going to affect revenues going forward.
Something you just touched on, so many people think right away of tax revenues, but parking, building permits, fees, those kind of things. If you could, just give a sense of how much of a city's budget does parking, building permits, and all that, does it make up?
Well, probably fees. Your two biggest, as I mentioned, are your property tax and your income tax in most cases. Some folks, the gross receipts tax, or sometimes known as the business privilege tax, can be a fairly large number, too. They're probably in single digits in terms of fees. But if you're a community where, you know, first of all, let's keep in mind that all of our folks have to have a balanced budget every year. And so any receding of revenues can be significant in your ability to present that balanced budget. Expenses are going to rise, at least in an inflationary manner. And so that if they're 10% the total fees of your total revenues, and they take a walk back of a significant percentage, it can be very damaging.
You said that there's a possibility of it being even worse in 2021. Why do you say that?
Well, I think that the tail is sort of coming. I think we haven't property taxes. You know, school districts are in the state is on a July 1st calendar year fiscal or fiscal budget, whereas communities are on a calendar year. So when they're going to start to do their budget shortly and present them, they're going to be looking at what the forecast is on those bigger items, the property tax and your income tax. They may have already seen it under an income tax with the unemployment rate being where it is. But I think the property tax is going to come home, is going to hit possibly more next year. And you might be looking at those other fees and things and having to pull those back a bit. So that's why I think 21 could be problematic.
Now, I want to talk about what you're looking for from the federal government. But right now, federal government money aid aside, what options do cities and municipalities have at this point?
Well, on the revenue side, there's a lot of variations in Pennsylvania, Scott, but I'll take a typical, which takes, again, the property tax and an income tax. Your income tax, unless you're a home rule municipality, you're stuck more than likely at 0.5%. Property tax, you can raise millage. Most of your other, everything else, you really don't have a menu of potential revenue sources, taxes, fees that you can take a look at and make sense, what makes sense for your community, which, by the way, on a separate note, maybe on a separate program someday, that's what it ought to be in Pennsylvania, but it's not. And so we're stuck with those statutory requirements that that's all we can do. On the expense side, 60% of most communities' budgets, a full-service community, if you will, which is folks that have police, fire, planning, community development, et cetera, 60 to 70% of that budget is going to be for public safety personnel. And so if you're going to look at the expense side, there is no question that you can't nibble around the edges. You're going to have to go after, look at that 60, 70% of your budget and make those changes. What that means is that public safety personnel are going to be affected. There will be less police and firemen, men and women on the streets of those communities in 21.
And no one wants to hear that. That's for sure. Okay, so you're looking for some aid from the federal government. What are you looking for in particular?
Well, we want to be included in the stimulus. I'm going to call it stimulus four, Scott. Some people have different iterations of that, but we look at it as four. And, you know, you can see, and certainly it's been in the news, and everybody's gone home now till September. We're looking to be included in this next package. We want to see direct aid to our communities included in this package. What we've seen today, we saw the CARES Act. We've seen the, some of the small business loan programs, paycheck protection. Those are all great things that have happened. But if we don't have a stimulus piece that goes to local governments in Pennsylvania, obviously it's all over the country, but we're talking about Pennsylvania. The recovery in Pennsylvania is going to be mitigated significantly because of the layoffs that you and I just talked about, and because of the other impacts that it's going to have on communities. Communities are going to be stuck or receding in terms of what they're doing and how they're advancing their community. Look, there's a direct relationship between the level of government service and your ability to foster economic and community development in your cities. If you can't provide, you know, we all want to say we want smaller government. But if you can't provide a level of government service that fosters economic community development, you'll simply keep on receding. Your community won't go forward. And so we really believe that the recovery in Pennsylvania will not happen without a stimulus and without that direct funding to our communities.
Pennsylvania's Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey has said, and it's been confirmed by the state, that the state is sitting on $1 billion from some of the stimulus packages or the aid packages from before. What about that? I mean, that's $1 billion that has not made its way to cities and municipalities.
Well, I'll say a couple things. One is that, sure, it's true. That money was, under the CARES Act, was allocated to the state. It could have been significant chunks went to counties. There are some counties who have made some funds available to communities. Frankly, not very much. Not any, you know, and I'm not saying that in a necessarily pejorative way. I'm just saying it hasn't gone out that much because they need it. They've had their own needs. And the same thing with the Commonwealth. And I'm not defending the Commonwealth. I think there's a lot of things that could be done, not only with the disbursement of those funds and make them more flexible and available to communities, but there's other things they could do that would help us on the expense side, too. But look, I'm not here to advocate or not advocate for the state. The fact of the matter is we need the federal government to provide the direct funding to our communities. Do I think the state should have or could have do more? Sure, I do. But keep in mind that the state also has the balanced budget problem that communities have. They're sitting on the money because they're going to have to come back in November and pass the remainder of their budget. I'm sure that's what's happening, and I'm not pretending to speak for anyone in the administration or anything else, but that's what's happening. We've got to look at the federal government who can do this. We've made this funding available to many sectors of our society. And, you know, I think in many cases, successfully, what has happened. We need to be looked at the same way in local government.
But you just pointed out one of the real challenges here is that everyone has been affected by the pandemic. And as a result, everyone is looking for some kind of financial help with the pandemic, with so many people losing their jobs, with so many businesses closing, all those things. So, I mean, you've touched on this, but make the case why it's important that cities and municipalities get help.
Sure. First of all, we're the sort of low entity, we're the last bastion of government, right? So as it gets passed down from Fed to state, it comes to local government, but it stops because there's nowhere else to go. So we have to deliver. And we're being asked to deliver public safety services. We're being asked to deliver infrastructure and capital projects so our communities the quality of life in our communities is at the highest point it can be. You know, we're being asked to make sure that our playgrounds and there are appropriate recreational amenities available for our citizens. We can't pass that on to anybody. I go back to the balanced budget issue. Look, we have had there's been a federal deficit for decades, and it goes through various iterations of whether people think it's okay or not okay and whether we should be attacking it or not. But that's the only level, and we've seen that now, COVID, rightfully so, where it hasn't been, we haven't worried about it. Let's not all of a sudden impose the federal deficit issue when it's time to fund local governments. The fact of the matter is, we truly believe that we are not going to have a full recovery in Pennsylvania unless local governments are allowed to recover too. And because we have nowhere else to go, we can't raise revenue of our own. And our expenses, by the way, I said about the laying off of personnel, which is the only where to go in many of these cases. It's also because we have binding arbitration laws that tell us how much we have to pay folks, that tell us what benefit levels have to be. So we're sort of, you know, trapped with these parameters built around us and nowhere to go. And the federal government is the only entity that can change that dynamic for us in terms of the funding level. The state can certainly do a lot in changing some of the arbitration laws, et cetera. But the federal government is the only one who can take care of this direct funding issue at this point in time.
Have cities and municipalities made cuts already?
Absolutely. We looked at in your listening area. I'm aware, you know, certainly the city of Lancaster has done some things. I'm aware in Lehigh Valley, Easton, Allentown, you go Scranton, have already done furloughs and taken some other actions. And I think, you know, my fear is that there's just simply going to be more that are going to start to occur. And I might add too. I just named cities. I want to name, you know, we use cities sort of generically. We're talking about Carlisle and Chambersburg and State College and many townships that are going to be affected. We're talking about all of them when I say those words about municipalities, communities, and cities. They're all going to be affected, and I worry about what they're going to have to face in their budgets coming forward. And I would realize that all of our folks are used to making hard decisions. They make them every day. And so they'll do it. But the fact is, they're going to do it in a way that isn't going to really be helpful in terms of bringing our economy back to where it was.
We have a comment here from Kathy in Campbelltown. Says, this may be a good time to start talking about township consolidation. I think she's talking about municipality consolidation to help spread out the tax burden. Pennsylvania with 2,500 municipalities, you know, the most in the country by far. Your response to that?
Well, I understand her and certainly recognize her suggestion. I don't think this is the time, only because it's sort of been you create these distractions and you go somewhere else, like that's going to solve the problem. Honestly, I don't think it is right now. That is not going to, it would be great if we could take a look at that. That's such a monumental lift in Pennsylvania that it would become a distraction. And I think take us away from the point that what the federal government's responsibility is here and how they need to step forward for us. But certainly her point is duly noted.
I want to take a step back for just a second, Rick. When we were talking about Senator Toomey saying the state is sitting on $1 billion, politically, and I hate to bring this up, but it's something that has to be considered. If Senator Toomey is saying that, there are others in Congress who are saying, why should we vote to give cities and municipalities more money if the state is sitting on money that we've already provided? And again, I understand where you're coming from when you say that I can't answer for the state, but you do have to provide an answer to that when obviously there are some members of Congress who are saying, we already provided a lot of money to you and it's not getting to you. Why should we give you more?
Sure. Couple of things. One is the Congress, the people that are saying that, are also the ones who passed the law that didn't give an awful lot of flexibility with those CARES Act funds, nor did they mandate that the state share it with local governments. So if you wanted that, then you should have done that. Number two is that even with a sharing or a flexibility, there's still not enough there to really address the gravity of the issue in local governments. And so I certainly get it, but that's the hand that was dealt to us, and you dealt it. So I think that flexibility and all that is great, but I don't want that. That's not going to be a replacement for a stimulus for and a significant funding level for local governments, of direct funding to local governments.
Rick, you know, you said that this is a conversation for another program. We've actually had this conversation, as you are well aware. But everything that you've talked about today is part of a long-term problem for cities and municipalities, isn't it?
Sure it is. And it occurs on both sides of the ledger. We have we are dealing with a system, in my opinion, in local government that is antiquated. And it needs to be addressed. And that's on the revenue and expense side. We need to bring it into 2020. Who is better to recognize what the revenue option should be other than the local officials? The state doesn't need to protect the taxpayers from their local officials. Local officials understand their communities, Erie's economy is different than Lancaster's. State colleges is different. They ought to be able to determine and have a menu that they can look at on what the appropriate ways to raise revenue are. On the expense side, there are so many mandates that are imposed on us, the biggest one being binding arbitration, that I think that, again, just some mitigation or quasi-relief from some of that could go such a long way in improving the quality of life in our communities.
Rick Schuettler is the executive director of the Pennsylvania Municipal League. Rick, we only have about 30 seconds left. What have you heard in response to your request for more help from the federal government?
Well, we remain optimistic. I don't think I have that much more inside information other than what someone can read or see. We're working with our partners at the National League of Cities, so I do get some of that feedback. We think we're still in the game, and or we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. And so we think that there's still a possibility for a deal, and we're hope and we think possibility for a deal that includes direct funding to local governments in Pennsylvania.
Rick Schuettler, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Scott. Take care.
Tomorrow we'll be talking about mail-in balloting.